Imagine for a second that you are scrolling through social media late at night. You know how it is, just kind of doom scrolling.
Right, we've all been there.
Yeah. And you stumble across an account. But this isn't your average finance influencer shouting about meme stocks or whatever.
Sure, not the usual hype.
Exactly. This account, let's just call the researcher Serenity, has gone completely viral. And they're picking these obscure microscopic companies buried deep, deep in the AI supply chain.
The really hidden ones.
Yeah, the ones nobody's ever heard of. And their track record. I mean,
Well,
it is turning into absolute legend.
see, it's the kind of discovery that immediately triggers that deeply ingrained part of the human brain, the part that says, I have found the cheat code.
Yeah.
The secret map to the treasure.
That is exactly the premise of today's deep dive. We are looking at this fascinating essay. It's titled Serenity's Alpha Died the Day It Went Public.
It's a great piece.
It really is. So the author of this piece gets a message at midnight from a friend, and the friend pitches this highly tempting idea. He says, "Why don't we just build an automated bot to copy trade this Serenity guy?"
Just shadow every move.
Right, we just automatically buy and sell whatever he posts.
Which is, I mean, it's a highly rational instinct on the surface. When you observe an actor consistently winning in a complex system, your evolutionary response is just to draft behind them.
Let them do the hard work.
Exactly. Let them expend the calories doing the research, and you just reap the rewards.
But the author's initial reaction was freezing cold. I mean, he basically told his friend that building a copy bot was completely pointless.
Yeah, totally shut it down.
And they spent the entire night debating why. Now, our mission for this deep dive is not to give you hot stock tips. We're not here to tell you which AI companies to buy.
Definitely not financial advice.
Right. Instead, we are going to reverse engineer this entire viral trading phenomenon because hidden inside this late night argument is a profound lesson about critical thinking, how we handle information overload, and, why the ultimate life hack isn't finding the right answers.
It's about building a better system of questions.
Exactly.
What's fascinating here is that while the entire internet was obsessing over the output meaning, what this viral trader was actually buying, the real gold mine, was in their underlying processing engine. It was how they were thinking.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to really understand the brilliance of this trader's methodology, we first have to understand why simply copying their trades is a terrible
It's a
idea.
trap. Yeah.
And I have to admit, when I was first reading the essay, I kind of sided with the buddy. I mean, if this Serenity person is a verified genius and they are making boatloads of money, why shouldn't I just plug my brokerage account into their feed and, go to the beach?
Well, it really comes down to understanding the fundamental difference between the content business and finance, because they operate on entirely different laws of physics.
Tell me more about that. How did the physics actually differ there?
Well, think about the mechanics of content creation.
Right.
Most things broadcast on the internet monetize through the broadcast itself.
Like getting views.
Exactly. You write an article to grow a following, to sell advertisements, or you post a video to get views to sell a course. The physics of content dictate that more eyeballs equal more value.
Right. Bigger audience, more money.
But finance is the complete opposite. A truly replicable, high-sharp trading strategy does not need an audience. In fact, an audience actively destroys it.
Okay, pause for a second because we promised to keep things accessible for everyone listening. Break down what a high-sharp strategy actually means in plain English and why it hates an audience.
Of course. So the Sharpe ratio is a metric professionals use to measure risk-adjusted return. Think of it like driving across the country. Two drivers might both get from New York to LA in exactly 40 hours. One did it by driving a steady, perfectly legal 70 miles an hour.
A nice, safe road trip.
Right. But the other driver drove 120, swerved through oncoming traffic, blew out a tire, and almost crashed 10 times.
So they both got the same result.
Yeah, they got the exact same return, 40 hours, but the steady driver took way less risk to get there. That steady driver has a high Sharpe ratio.
Ah, I see.
So if a financial operator possesses a strategy that is that smooth, that consistently profitable, the mathematically correct move is to quietly go to a prime broker, take on leverage, and just pile in more of their own capital.
So if you have a machine that literally prints money, you don't invite a million people into the room to watch you use it.
Yeah.
You just lock the door and run the machine.
Precisely. Publishing your brilliant thesis to the world just dilutes your own potential return. It invites competition. No purely rational financial operator does that.
Which begs the obvious question, right? If someone is posting their brilliant trades for millions of people to see on social media, what are they actually doing?
And this is the critical takeaway for you as the listener. The moment a trading account starts needing reach, needing retweets, needing its track record to be seen by the public,
it changes things.
It has ceased to be a pure research operation. The return structure has absorbed that public reach as a necessary input.
Wow.
Yeah. Once an account turns into a traffic magnet, you have to ask yourself, are they sharing research or are they distributing stock into the exact demand they just created?
Oh, that's wild. It's like finding a secret, absolutely pristine fishing spot in the woods. The water is clear, the fish are biting, it's just perfect.
And gem.
Right. But the moment you take a picture of it and post it on social media with the exact GPS coordinates, it fundamentally stops being a secret fishing spot. It becomes a crowded tourist trap.
It's ruined.
Yeah, the physical location hasn't moved, but the nature of the asset has mutated entirely just because of the attention.
That analogy gets right to the heart of it. The asset mutates. The author of the essay actually brings in a concept coined by the legendary investor George Soros to explain this. He calls it reflexivity.
Reflexivity. Okay, break that down for us.
Sure. So in physical sciences, studying a thing doesn't change the thing. But in financial markets, Soros argued that the perception of an asset actually changes the underlying reality of the asset.
Huh.
And then that reality, in turn, validates the new perception. So the rise in a stock's price can actually become the fundamental reason for the continued rise in the price.
So the original logic for buying the stock gets completely drowned out by the noise of the crowd rushing in.
Exactly. Let's map it onto the life cycle of a viral trade, like they detailed in the source material. It usually happens in three distinct phases.
Okay, what's phase one?
In the early phase, what the trader holds is a genuine research-driven edge. They did the hard, lonely work. They found a misread component in the AI supply chain that no one else was valuing correctly. So the fundamentals are driving the bus.
Right. That's our pristine fishing spot. Nobody else is there yet.
Then you enter the middle phase, which is price discovery. The trader posts their thesis online. A few savvy retail investors read it. Maybe some institutional algorithms catch the chatter.
And the price starts moving.
Right. It adjusts upward to reflect this new correct information.
But then comes the late phase, the danger zone,
yeah.
Where the copy bots just get absolutely obliterated.
Right. By the late stage, the thesis has gone fully viral. Now, we have to talk about the mechanics of the stock itself, because these obscure companies often have an extremely thin float.
Meaning there just aren't that many shares actually available to trade on the open market.
Exactly. Imagine a stadium with only 50 seats available for sale. If three people want tickets, the market is totally calm.
Makes sense.
But if a massive pop star tweets about that stadium and suddenly 10,000 people want tickets, the price goes astronomical instantly because the supply is fixed.
The demand completely overwhelms it.
Yes. When a viral mob hits a thin float microcap stock, the available shares get absorbed in minutes. The price rockets upward. But here is the reflexive part.
Okay.
The crowd looks at that massive price spike and says, look how much it went up. This Serenity guy is a genius. The thesis is proven.
Which just pours gasoline on the fire. I mean, it creates a feedback loop of pure hype.
At that late stage, the underlying fundamentals of that tiny AI company might still be totally real. They might make great products. But the price of their stock is no longer a function of those products.
It's detached from reality.
It is purely a function of narrative diffusion, liquidity shocks, and raw emotion.
You know, the essay brought up this wild parallel that illustrates this perfectly. They called it lobster fever.
Oh, right. The lobster fever example.
It's crazy. It happened in China, where an ordinary, highly technical, open source coding project somehow got caught in the recommendation algorithm of short video platforms like Douyin.
Just a completely random repo?
Yeah. And suddenly, it's a nationwide craze. You had ordinary retail investors, grandmothers, acquaintance networks, everyone just amplifying this technical repo into the stratosphere.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the mechanics of lobster fever are identical to our viral AI trader. Late in the hype cycle, it is not the underlying asset that is moving the price. The thing driving the price is the amplifier itself.
The algorithm.
The social media algorithm. The virality.
So if I am the guy sitting at home building a bot to copy trade this account, I genuinely believe I am replicating someone's genius research edge.
But you aren't. What you are actually doing is replicating their tail liquidity risk.
Tail liquidity risk. Okay, unpack the mechanics of that for the listener, because that sounds scary.
It should be. Tail risk refers to a rare but catastrophic event. And liquidity risk means you are holding an asset, but when you want to sell it, there is literally no one left to buy it.
You're stuck with it.
So tail liquidity risk means you are buying a massively inflated stock where the only way to make a profit is to find a greater fool to sell it to before the hype dies.
A giant game of musical chairs.
And when the music stops, the pool of buyers evaporates instantly. You can't sell at any price.
Yeah.
The early movers got paid for seeing a fundamental truth. The latecomers are just gambling that they won't be the last ones holding the bag.
Okay, so if blindly copying the tickers is a guaranteed way to lose your shirt, what did the author of this essay actually find so valuable? Because they didn't just dismiss this Serenity person. I mean, they stayed up all night deconstructing their approach.
Because they realized the true alpha wasn't in the output. It wasn't the stock pick itself.
Okay.
The alpha was in the process. It was Serenity's core research methodology, specifically how they view systems.
Here's where it gets really interesting. And I actually want to push back on the author's premise here, or at least, you know, play devil's advocate for a second.
Definitely.
If I know that artificial intelligence is the biggest technological wave of our generation, why am I digging through supply chains looking for a microscopic substrate manufacturer in Ohio?
Right. Why bother?
Isn't that taking on insane amounts of unnecessary risk? Like, why wouldn't I just buy Microsoft or Nvidia or Google and go play golf?
It's a great question, and it gets to the very core of market efficiency. You can absolutely buy Nvidia. But the problem is, every hedge fund, pension fund, and retail investor on planet Earth already knows Nvidia makes the chips for AI.
It's no secret.
Exactly. That information is perfectly priced into the stock. If you want an outsized return true alpha, you can't invest in what the market already knows. You have to find the unpriced constraints.
So instead of starting from the top down, Serenity starts from the system down. The essay notes that Serenity asks a very specific question. As compute climbs, which link jams first?
That is the defining question of a systems thinker. The author previously wrote a piece arguing that compute is the new oil. We are building these massive data centers at breakneck speed.
Oh.
But the physical world has limits. If you scale compute exponentially, where does the architecture physically buckle?
Walk us through the mechanics of that. Like, why does a system buckle?
Well, think about the actual physics of a data center. You have thousands of processors talking to each other. Historically, they sent data over copper wires.
Which worked fine for a while.
It did. But as compute scales, pushing that much data through copper creates massive electrical resistance. It generates incredible heat, and it literally slows down. Copper becomes a physical bottleneck.
It just can't handle the traffic.
So the industry has to shift to optics,
right,
using lasers to transmit data via light.
Wow. Okay, so Serenity isn't looking for AI companies generally. They're looking for the company that manufactures the highly specific external light source needed because copper is literally physically melting down.
Precisely. They are mapping the entire supply chain, the interconnects, the optics, the advanced packaging, the testing equipment, and hunting for the constraint.
And this methodology was so effective that the author actually turned it into an open source tool.
Yeah, the Serenity Bottleneck Research Framework.
Right. But the beauty of this tool is that it absolutely refuses to give you stock picks.
It acts as a cognitive debugger. It forces you to take a grand, exciting market narrative and break it down into concrete, falsifiable logic gates.
Let's flow through these logic gates because they are incredibly rigorous. The tool starts by demanding you prove the system over the stock.
Right, step one.
You have to define exactly where the old architecture is physically failing. But once you do that, it forces you to categorize your prospective company into one of three buckets.
And you have to be totally ruthless here. The three buckets are beneficiary, bottleneck, and choke point.
I was thinking about a way to visualize this for the listener. Imagine a massive wave of traffic trying to get from one city to another for a huge event.
Okay, I like this.
A beneficiary is like a gas station along the highway. They're going to sell a lot of snacks and make great money while the traffic is high. But if that gas station raises its prices too much, drivers will just wait and go to the next one. The system can route around them.
That's spot on.
And a bottleneck.
A bottleneck is a one-lane construction zone on that highway. It drastically slows down the speed of the traffic. It constrains the system's capacity.
Right.
But a choke point. A choke point is the only bridge across a massive river. There are no other roads. There are no detours. Every single car must pass through that toll booth.
And mistaking a gas station for the only bridge across the river is where catastrophic investment losses happen.
That makes so much sense.
If a company is just a beneficiary, their pricing power is temporary. Competitors will just spin up factories and crush their margins. A true choke point is a component or process that the entire industry genuinely cannot avoid within the relevant time window.
So how does the tool verify that you actually found the bridge and not just a gas station with really good PR?
It forces you to grade your evidence. In the era of social media, a viral post by an influencer is just a lead.
Barely even that sometimes.
Exactly. A company's slick marketing copy is a severely weak signal. You cannot build a thesis on this sounds plausible.
You need undeniable reality.
Undeniable reality lives in the financial filings. You need named, signed contracts with major buyers. You need capacity disclosures. And above all, you need to see the pricing power translate into cold, hard cash flow and gross margins.
The numbers can't lie.
Right. If a company truly owns the choke point, the math will prove it.
But the framework goes even deeper. Because just sitting on the choke point doesn't mean the company is a good investment.
No, it doesn't.
The tool interrogates how the company captures that value. And this brings up a concept from the essay that trips up a lot of retail investors. Dilutive financing. Walk us through the mechanics of that.
Let's go back to your bridge analogy. The company owns the only bridge, and traffic is beaming. Great. But the bridge is at maximum capacity. To handle the AI boom, they need to build a second bridge.
Which is expensive.
And the problem is, they don't have the cash to build it.
So they have to raise money.
Right. And they do that by issuing new shares of stock. They're literally printing new shares out of thin air to sell to the market. That is dilutive financing.
Okay.
It is like having an 8-slice pizza and suddenly cutting it into 16 slices. You don't have more pizza. You just made everyone's individual slice smaller.
That's a painful realization.
Even if the company grows, your slice of the pie was diluted to pay for the growth. So the framework forces you to ask, can they scale without diluting the current shareholders?
It is a brutal gauntlet. I mean, and let's say a company survives all of it. They are the choke point. The margins are incredible. They aren't diluting their stock. There is still one final reality check before you can invest.
The biggest one.
And it brings us all the way back to the beginning of our deep dive, the reflexivity filter.
The final check forces you to answer, where are we in the diffusion cycle?
Have the tourists already found the fishing spot?
Precisely. You might have found the perfect company with the perfect fundamentals sitting on an undeniable choke point. But if the stock has already gone viral,
it's too late.
If it's been reposted to death on social media, the price has already absorbed all of that future perfection. You are entering the post-squeeze danger zone. The exact same company carries a completely different risk-to-reward ratio, depending on whether you are the first one to find the bridge or the millionth person in line.
So what does this all mean? We've gone from a late night argument about a viral X account to a rigorous framework for deconstructing global supply chains.
It's quite a leap.
If we pull back the lens, the author is pointing to a massive structural shift in how we must process information. We live in an era where AI can summarize, copy, and diffuse information instantly, which means any public edge, any secret ticker symbol you think you've uncovered on the internet vanishes faster than ever before.
In a world where instant, ready-made answers are available to everyone at the push of a button, those answers hold zero premium. The true scarcity in the AI era is possessing a better system of questions.
It's the discipline to separate a grand narrative from physical reality.
It is the ability to write down your kill criteria. The specific mechanical things that would prove your thesis wrong before the hype and emotion take over.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. As you go about your week, we want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. We spent this whole time talking about using human ingenuity to find the invisible choke points in the AI supply chain.
Right.
But AI models are getting exponentially smarter every single month. What happens in 5 or 10 years when AI becomes capable of instantly mapping its own physical supply chains, anticipating its own structural bottlenecks, and automatically routing capital to solve them before a human analyst ever even notices a problem?
That's a wild thought.
Will the concept of an investment choke point even exist for human beings in a decade? Or will the machines trade the constraints away before we even wake up?